So there is this tradition of dream work that belongs to the very essence of the tradition. Because dreams come from the unseen, and Sufis have always worked with the unseen, with the invisible world, with the inner world, with the world of remembrance of God. And part of the work of the Sufi is to keep alive this flame of remembrance that has been passed down from teacher to disciple, from heart to heart, since the earliest days. And although the inner essence of the Sufi teaching is this transmission of love, it is part of the work of the Sufi is how to weave this invisible essence into everyday life, how to make the substance of the soul part of the fabric of day-to-day life. You see, it is easy to say somewhere we are united with God. In the innermost core of the heart, we are already in a state of union. We are already there. We are already at peace. Everything has already been given. Since the beginning of time, it was given because He is one. And in the circle of oneness, everything is always given. But the work is to take this invisible essence, this hidden core of our being, and make out of it a life that reflects His oneness, that reflects this core, to take it out into the multiplicity of the outer world. And Sufis have always lived in the ordinary everyday life. Soldiers of the two worlds, of the inner world of the spirit and the outer world of everyday life. And the difficulty is how to bridge these two realities that seem so different. This inner dimension of oneness, of total love, of total acceptance, of harmony, of bliss, and outer everyday life, which, as we know, rarely reflects those qualities. And even more in this very discordant society in which we live. And one of the wonderful qualities of dreams is they are a bridge. They come to us in the night when we are no longer so caught up in all the complexities and discord of everyday life. They come to us from this dimension of our soul, well, some dreams do. And they can help us to live our outer life in harmony with our inner self. And I think this is one of the great tasks of contemporary people, how to live the outer life in harmony with the inner self. So eventually, the two work together, and then there is this wonderful flow between the inner and the outer, like a figure eight, in which the beauty and wisdom of the inner flows into the outer, and the multiplicity of the outer nourishes the inner, and so the whole miracle of creation takes place within each human being. And woven into that is the journey of the soul. This ancient journey that we began long ago, in each lifetime we pick up the threads of this journey. This is why I title one of my books, Catching the Thread, and that is part of the science of Sufi dream work, to catch this thread, which is the thread of our own deepest destiny that is within us. And we each have it, this golden thread of the soul, that is the soul's purpose in incarnation. And part of the work of the mystic is to catch this thread of our deepest purpose and find it in the outer world and in the inner world. I love this saying from the Quran, and He has placed His signs on the horizons and in themselves. It is so powerful. The signs of God are in the outer world and in the inner world, but we have to learn how to look, how to see, how to listen, not with the ear that is caught up in the discord of the world, in the noise, in all the myriad impressions that bombard us, but with the ear attuned to love, with the ear attuned to the wisdom of the heart. And part of the work of dream work is learning to listen. This is, of course, the ancient feminine wisdom. And one of the reasons we have lost touch with the wisdom of our inner self is we have forgotten this feminine wisdom of listening. Because real dream work is not interpretation. It is listening. It is catching this thread, this subtlety, these nuances, this poetry, this fragrance. And Sufism is all about catching the fragrance and following the fragrance. The Sufis talk a lot about the musk of the musk deer, the fragrance of the rose. And you catch the musk of the musk deer and you follow it till one day you find the luminous deer. And it is so simple. You see, all Sufi things are in nature simple because God is simple essence. Truth is simple essence. But to live this inner simplicity of the heart and through dream work to see how the worlds come together, to see how the inner and the outer mirror each other and how the inner unfolds itself into outer life, that is so beautiful. It is. I have had a privilege of listening to dreams for 25 years and seeing how this strange alchemical process works within human beings and how the mystery of the soul begins by knocking on the door of consciousness and beckoning the human being, saying, come, listen to me. I have secrets to unfold. I have whole temples to take you into. I have beautiful music to play to you. I have lovers like you can never imagine possible. Somebody wrote me a dream a while ago in which she found this most perfect man came to meet her. He was intelligent, he was caring, he was loving, he was strong, he was tender, he would support her, he would look after her forever. And that is the reality of the inner world of the soul. Sadly, we rarely find it in the outer life. This was actually the very first dream that started my interpretation of dreams, because it was a dream Mrs. Tweedy didn't interpret. In the Sufi tradition, really, if you have an important dream, you take it to the teacher or to the sheikh, and they interpret it for you. We have kind of, on the path to which I belong, it has become developed into group dream work. But in those early days, when I was with Mrs. Tweedy, if you had an important dream, you told it to her. And I always remember this dream because I had, 6 months before, I had broken up, or I hadn't broken up, my girlfriend had broken up with me, and I'd been in love with her since I was 15, and I was 21 or something, and she had broken up with me because I was too introvert, and she wanted to live extrovert life. I didn't quite understand what she said, because I just looked into her eyes, and I saw this beautiful soul, and, you know, and felt desolate for months. And then I had this dream, and I was back together with her, and there was so much bliss, and so much love, and so much tenderness, and I woke up and say, aha, this is prophetic dream, you know? And I went out and bought some flowers for my room, and, you know, tidied the bed, and of course, she never came, but I told this dream to Mrs. Tweedy, and she said, very interesting dream. And then she turned to this wise Lady Margaret, who helped her with dream work. And they were a wonderful pair, because Mrs. Tweedy was this international figure. You know, she was born in Russia, she fled, and she grew up in Vienna, and then she went to Paris, and then she lived in Switzerland, then she went to Italy, and et cetera, et cetera. She spoke four languages. She thought nothing of flying to California for a weekend when she was in her 80s. And the person whom my sheikh sent to help her was this lady called Margaret, who's still alive, who was Cornish and had never been out of England in her life, and very simple, very down to earth, but with a clarity and a sharpness you didn't want to go near to. I was always frightened of her in the early years in the group because I knew she saw straight through me. And it's very embarrassing to sit with somebody who looks straight through you. So anyway, she has a great understanding of dreams. And so I said this dream, Mrs. Tweedy said, interesting dream, and turned to Margaret and said, very auspicious dream, isn't it, Margaret? And Margaret said, yes, my dear, and that was it. So I thought, well, maybe I better start to work on my dreams myself after that. And years later, of course, I understood the meaning of the dream, which had to do with an experience in the night of being back with the beloved. But the only image I had of the beloved, I was new to Sufism, the only image I had of the beloved was my girlfriend who had left me, which is, of course, the great archetypal mystery of the love story of the soul, you know, this poem of Rumi. The minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind I was. Lovers never meet each other, they're in each other all along. And to know that this beloved is waiting for you and speaks to you, and speaks to you with the language of the soul, which has traditionally been the language of dreams. And so part of the work that she brought to the West and we have continued is this tradition of Sufi dream work, which belongs very much to the Naqshbandi tradition to which I belong. The founder of our order, Bahauddin Naqshband, was renowned as an interpreter of dreams. In fact, he would never accept a disciple until he had had a dream. And so we work with dreams, and part of the work we have done has been to blend the spiritual dimension of the tradition of Sufi dream work with contemporary Jungian psychology that allows for an understanding of the Western psyche. Because one thing I discovered is a lot of the Sufi manuals, particularly in relationship, for example, to the nafs and aspects like that, they describe a psyche that is structured differently to the Western psyche. For example, the inner partner in the East is not so differentiated. The ego is not so strongly structured. And so it is helpful to have a model of Western psychology to help understand this alchemical process of inner transformation that happens within all of us. And part of the journey of the soul is this process of inner transformation, which is quite extraordinary to witness happening within yourself and to be sent these dreams. And part of the, if you like, the science of spiritual dream work is what Bysab said, is to know first from where the dream comes. This is very important because dreams can come from many different levels of reality. You know, human beings function on many different levels of reality. It's something we have forgotten. And for example, there is what one would call just mind dreams. And that's when you have things you have seen, movies you have been to, films you have seen, conversations you have had, they come up in your dreams. And this is just like the cow chews the cud. The mind, you know, sifts through these images in order to digest it. I think apparently if you stop somebody dreaming, they go crazy because there is no ability to digest all of the impressions that have happened during the day. And from spiritual or psychological point of view, these dreams are totally unimportant. And then there are the personal psychological dreams. You know, your mother complex, your father complex, you know, you suddenly have a dream in which you're back together with somebody you haven't known since you were at school. And then you have to work out, what does that person mean to me? Why is that person coming to me? And this is the whole science of psychological dream work, which we don't do in our group because we leave people to do it on their own, because that's really your own personal psychological work. And these images that belong to your personal psyche, they have meaning only for you. Of course, there are no clear dividing lines because the psyche is totally undifferentiated. And you can have spiritual dreams with personal psychological things woven into them. But so there are these personal psychological dreams, your own personal figures. For example, most of us by now have a figure who represents our shadow, our dark side. And he comes in your dream and you say, ah, yes, you know, nice to see you again. Or there is the You know, many women have, for some reason I don't quite understand, have a man who chases them down corridors with a knife, particularly a kitchen knife, and is out to get them. And, you know, the work is then to integrate that part of the masculine that is somehow seen as violent or abusive. And so all that work goes on, and this is the, it is also the basic psychological work of polishing the mirror of the heart and integrating the darkness. And then out of that arise the inner figures of animus or anima, the inner lovers. And then there are the deeper archetypal dreams, which Jung, Carl Jung, wrote about a lot. And I studied Jungian psychology in quite some depth because that is really the language he describes, the language of the Western psyche on the archetypal level. Now remember, the spiritual path takes you to the very depths of yourself. It takes you through all the layers of the psyche. And you need to have some kind of tools to deal with what happens, because, you know, when a soul turns towards God and attracts the grace to transform the whole psyche, it is a very, very deep process. I mean, that is why one of the reasons that, you know, Sufi spiritual training takes at least 20 years, if not 40 years. And one of the layers of the psyche you encounter is this archetypal realm, and you can have wonderful dreams or terrible dreams. You can encounter monsters, you can encounter Kali, you can encounter gods and goddesses and the most beautiful things imaginable. And this is a whole different spectrum of dream work. And these archetypal dreams have what's called a numinous energy. And sometimes when you wake up, you feel this is more real than real life. You enter a great cathedral in the night. You hear beautiful music. Well, that can come from another level, actually. But, you know, you get given a magical sword. Or you find yourself in the midst of a beautiful mandala. This is the archetypal dimension of the psyche. And as I say, they have a particular luminosity. And then you go, there is another dimension beyond then when you begin to enter the spiritual realm. And this is the area in which the Naqshbandis in particular work in dream work. And that is when the soul begins to speak to you with this language of the beloved. I always remember when I was giving, years ago, I gave a workshop in Minnesota, in the northern part of Minnesota, and somebody came, who, young woman whose husband ran a hardware store in the town. And she had a dream in which, first of all, she met this man and she felt this incredible love. And she said there was tenderness and love. It was not sexual, but there was such love like she'd never experienced. And then this man opened the door and she came into this workshop. And there were tables, and at these tables were sitting old men with long beards, and they were carding wool. And they had been carding wool for so long together, they no longer had to speak to each other. They read each other's minds. And I was so moved by this dream because she knew nothing of Sufism. She knew nothing of the symbolism of wool for the Sufi. My favorite definition is of being a Sufi is you are a Sufi when your heart is as soft and as warm as wool. She knew nothing of the process in which wool is carded within the soul, in which you are tenderized, in which you are softened. I once had a dream in which I was told I was made soft by a very hard system. This ancient process that the Sufis have perfected over centuries of softening the heart of the human being, of carding wool. And these masters of the path that she encountered, who had been doing it for so long. And these masters are real. And when you enter the arena of the path, you enter the dimension of these masters of love that are there to help in this work of mystical transformation. And dreams like this take on a whole different quality, a whole different texture. And really, they take us into the arena of the soul, and they speak to us in this amazing language that we have forgotten. And we don't have to read a book about it, and we don't have to study anything about it, because it is our own language. And you get these dreams of one of, for example, somebody I knew who soon after they came to the group, they had a dream in which they came into a bar, and the bartender was behind the bar, and the bartender asked him what he wanted to drink, and he looked at the bartender, and the bartender didn't have a face, and the bartender said the name of the dreamer. And that is, of course, part of the whole tradition of being taken into the tavern of ruin, where you become drunk with the wine from the eyes of the beloved. And the bartender, who doesn't have a name, reflects the mystery of the Sufi teacher who is without a face and without a name, because the Sufi teacher is faceless. Like this beautiful saying of Bahauddin Naqshband, who he was referring to an earlier Sufi master I mentioned last night, Al-Hakim At-Tirmidhi, and he said, "For 22 years I have been following in the footsteps of Al-Hakim At-Tirmidhi. He was featureless and formless, and now I am featureless and formless. Those who know will know, and those who understand will understand." And this young man, he ran a printing shop in Zurich. He still runs a printing shop in Zurich. Had a dream of which he didn't understood nothing. But the dream understood him. And the dream opened this doorway into this great mystery, which is, I think, the greatest mystery of being a human being, the mystery of spiritual transformation, in which one becomes intoxicated, one becomes lost in something one cannot name. And these dreams, they tell us what is happening. Because you can read it in books, yes, but it's somebody else's words. But when you wake up from a dream of being together with the beloved who is so beautiful you cannot describe her, or so tender you can't describe him, it is your experience. And one of the things I feel, particularly in the West, we don't need other people to teach us anything. We need our own experience. We don't need to be told what to experience something or how to experience something. We need to have our own experience valued, our own unique journey. We don't want to make anybody else's journey. Like Rumi says, unfold your own myth. And our dreams tell us of our journey, of our relationship to our beloved. And everybody has a dream. And so many times I have heard people say, "I don't dream." And then they come to the group, and then they start to have this amazing series of dreams, and their soul speaks to them and cries to them, and they get drawn into this mystery of their own self. And then there is another whole spectrum of dreams which are spiritual teachings. Because as I mentioned, in the night, the soul is free. The king is not in his castle, the prisoner is not in his cell. And there are other levels of reality, and on other levels of reality, the soul is taught. And if you need to know on this level, you often get told in a dream. You get a dream of spiritual teaching. It's very beautiful. For example, I was helped a lot by people in our group who had dreams of this conference before it happened, so I began to have a glimpse of what it was about. Something that is neither of the East nor of the West. So there is no guidebook for Sufi dream work, unfortunately, because it doesn't work like that. It has to do with listening. It has to do with being attentive. It has to do with catching this golden thread of your own spiritual destiny. But a great Jungian analyst I had the privilege to meet, he has died now. He was a friend of Jung's and Emma Jung, Dr. Engel. Whenever I was in New York, I used to go and meet with him, and he was one of those numinous human beings. And he said, the dream will always make itself known. Trust the dream, he said. It will always make itself known. You learn to listen, you learn to trust, you learn to be full of wonder. And then your soul speaks to you because it is longing to talk to you. It is longing to share with you the mystery of your own self. You don't have to analyze it. Some dreams you just have to stay with, and slowly they nourish you, because dreams also are full of energy. People don't realize that. They think, what does the dream mean? But dreams can be impacted with energy from another reality. They are like drafts of wine for the soul, from the soul to us. And so you sip the dream, you stay with the dream, you let the dream speak to you, reveal itself to you. It comes from the part of you that is so much wiser than the little small ego self, even a good, well-developed spiritual ego self. You know, one of the things I love about Sufism is one doesn't have to know anything. My Sheikh used to say, forget, forget, and forget. Throw it behind you, forget. When you need it, it's there. When you need a dream will be there. And if you don't, it isn't there, ask, and you will get it. And if you don't get it, you didn't need it. On this path, one is allowed to be lost, hopelessly lost. It is one of the joys of being a Sufi. You can lose everything, even yourself. And as a friend of mine was told in a dream, on this path, you don't have to have any money in the bank. But you do have to learn to listen. To listen with an ear attuned to love. To listen with the inner ear of the heart. And much of the dream work we do in our group is really a process of listening. And then being nourished by what you hear. But be careful, always be careful, because remember, dreams are also illusions. One of the guiding principles Mrs. Tweedy taught us was, if there is duality, you are not yet there. As long as there is you and the experience, you and the dream, it is not yet reality. When you are the experience, when there is oneness, then it is real. And one of the reasons in our tradition we share dreams in a group is because when something is shared in a group, people know if it's real or not. People know if it's an illusion. There is a story behind this of Bahauddin Naqshband, who had a disciple, and this disciple was so advanced he didn't come to all the group meetings anymore. And he had these wonderful experiences every night. And Bahauddin got to hear about it, and he called the disciple to him. And he said, well, tell me one of these experiences. And the man told Bahauddin the experience, and Bahauddin says, that is all Satan. That is all an illusion. That is all a fabric of your imagination. That is not a real experience at all. And one of the qualities of sharing a dream in a group, which we do in our tradition, we do very simple meetings. We do a silent meditation, and we have a cup of tea and a cookie together because it's important just to be together, and then we share dreams. and sharing dreams in a group somehow things that are just illusion, they smell differently. It's difficult to describe. So that is the tradition I want to share with you this afternoon. And so the simplest way is really for people who have dreams who would like to share them, unless you have any questions to start with before we do that. Maybe somebody has a question about something. Hillary, you're going to be the person with the microphone. Oh, yes, right, yeah. And if you, well, first of all, we have questions. Anybody got a question? Yes, she has a question. Is this up? One, two, it's not on. You switch it on? Is that on?
I'm wondering about recurring dreams.
Recurring dreams are important. If you have a dream that recurs, Hillary, don't disappear because then you have to take it to the next person. If you have a dream that it recurs, it is important because your unconscious is trying to tell you something. Yeah. Then it's very important. Yeah. Good. Any other questions before we speak now or forever? Hold your peace. No? No. Everybody is satisfied so far. So really, if people have dreams they like to share, and please, if you don't want it to be recorded, just put your hand up and then he will press the button. You don't have to be shy. Yes? And take the microphone. Yes?
So I'm in a theater or a room and looking at this massive shark swimming by. And
a shark is swimming by.
Bites the back of this big rock that it goes behind. And the rock breaks open, and these beads or eggs all fall out. And I awoke with a start.
So wait a minute, you're in a room, and there's a shark swimming
by? It's as if an aquarium, like maybe Monterey Aquarium or something.
And then behind the shark, there is a rock?
Well, the shark swims behind the rock.
And then the rock opens, and out of the rock come beads or eggs?
Beads or eggs or some like pearls, kind of.
Hey, wow. So behind your aggressive nature, within the rock of yourself, there is this pearl of great price. Does that feel
right?
What's
the shark?
What?
Why the shark?
You don't have any form of aggression in your unconscious?
Not I, no.
A friend of ours in the group had to go back to New York. She'd been living in California for a year. And just before she went back, she had a dream in which she was told to swim with the sharks. She worked for a big investment bank or something.
Okay.
In the symbolism, a rock is often symbolizes the self, one's real nature. This is like Christ who said to build your house upon a rock, not upon the shifting sands of illusion. And this is actually, your dream is in some ways very classical because the aggression, the shark that's in your unconscious is what Jung would call the shadow part of you, your own darkness. And part of the cunning subtlety in which we are made is our real treasure, the real light, the real gold, is protected by the shadow. And the first thing you have to encounter is your shadow, is your own repressed anger, maybe a shark, because I don't know, whatever a shark is for you. I mean, maybe, you know, you have love affair with sharks. Maybe sharks is you have pets.
I saw it as a kind of a vicious primal power.
There you go. Well, that's absolutely classic. Then if you can confront that, then you will find behind it is the treasure of your real nature. And this is why the journey often begins with the confrontation with the shadow, with the confrontation with one's own darkness. And after, you know, what Andrew was talking about on Saturday, this initial honeymoon period, you know, when you first come to a path, you know, the self just explodes with joy. And you have this wonderful honeymoon time. And it lasts about 6 months if you're lucky. And then...
So I'm going to have a honeymoon with a shark?
And then after that, well, at the moment, you know, you're just in the aquarium. It's all safe. I mean, it's just... Okay. Then behind the shadow is... the rock of yourself that contains the pearl of great price. Or if you think of it as eggs, eggs have to do with the future and all the symbolism of rebirth. So it's really, the psyche is showing you very clearly what is waiting for you. And, you know, first you have to encounter this primal power. I mean, it's... So it's a very auspicious dream, and something is saying, hey, maybe you are interested. Yeah? But there's a lot waiting for you. Actually, very often when you first are attracted to spiritual life, your higher self gives you a dream that describes the whole journey to you. It's quite wonderful to hear. And you know, you think you're going to get it because you got it on the first day. And you know, 10 years later, you're still working to it. It's like sometimes if you come to the right path, the first time you sit to meditate, you know, you can have the best meditation ever. A friend of mine, he told me just a while ago, he's been with us for about 10 years, and he said, you know, the first time he ever did this meditation, his mind totally was still, and he was just in this empty space. So this is great meditation. Just sit down and do it. Mind is still, goes away, no problem. You know, he said 10 years later, he had never had another experience like that. But his higher self was encouraging him. So something is encouraging you, but saying also there is this primal energy, this power that you need to look at first. Yeah?
Well, thank you.
Great. Wonderful dream. Yes. You. Yeah. And please, if anybody has questions or thoughts they want, just put the hand up about the dreams.
Well, I was at a crossroads many years ago.
In the dream or in life?
In life.
In life.
And maybe 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I had my honeymoon. I had started meditation, was on the path, felt good. I knew that was where I was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And then came a dry period. I was confused. Nothing was happening, nothing magical.
It lasted, what, 5 years?
Oh. 5 months.
Oh, you're lucky. 5 months dry period.
Maybe less. And went to bed that night somewhat depressed. Where am I going? What's happening? Is this real? And then slept through the night. But towards dawn, I found myself awake in a dream. I looked around. I says, this is astounding. Where am I? I'm awake. This can't be real, but it's real. This is me. But this environment is so phenomenal. It's fantastic. And I looked up at the ground and the sky, and then when I looked up out of the sky, I saw this outline of a human being just gently gliding down a direct angle towards me. He landed in the ground in front of me. But all it was an outline of a human being, but inside was fire and light. Just some energy, some spiritual presence. Mm-hmm. I knew it was something powerful, but still I wondered. But then it lifted its hand and pointed its finger at the center of my forehead. Uh-huh. And then this stream came out. I got to such a pitch and such a fever that started to, it felt like someone was sticking a spear in my head. Here I'm in the dream thinking, whoa. And it's a very strange reality because I knew I was me, but this wasn't me. But then I woke up almost instantaneously, still with the same vibration on my forehead, my whole body vibrating. And then I says, boy, that was an interesting dream. I wonder what that meant.
Very interesting dream, yeah.
But then, before I knew it, I got up, and I didn't take two or three steps, and I felt like I was drunk, intoxicated. The whole world took on this, what you could say, a glow. You could see the phenomenal world, or the world as we see normally. Mm-hmm. It was like a shadow. I mean, it was there, it was real, but underneath that, there was some other substance that was more illuminated, mm-hmm. that was more real. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, through the course of the day, it wore off. But at least I regained my faith on the path. Because I was wondering to that point, which way am I going to go? This is a lot of work. But from then on, I felt comfortable enough to journey on.
Thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful. Yeah. If we are in need, the help is always there. Always. Always. Yes, my dear.
I had a dream about 10 days ago. And when I came here the first night, I was telling the dream in the dream to someone. And in that dream, I was in a factory, and it was like I knew the story that was going to happen. And I knew the factory was producing yellow powder. And I knew the factory would break down. I knew the factory would break down. So I told a Korean friend of me, we have to go away, you know, as far as possible. Let's go, yeah. So that's what we did. And the factory broke down, and the whole area was full of this yellow powder.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were inhaling it.
Yeah.
And then I said, we need a place of protection. So we went. We went looking for a house we could get protection. And then there were a few small houses, and I said we need a shower and protection. And then we came to the one house. There were two men outside. They looked like Turks. And they invited us in, but I said, no, thank you, we need a bath. That's it.
And how do you feel about this dream?
Well, when I woke up, I had a hard time to write it down because I was somehow so far away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me it was a sulfur factory, so there is...
Was what?
Sulfur.
And what's sulfur for you?
Sulfur is purifying. It has a healing property.
So what was the yellow powder? Was the sulfur that had been purified or what?
Pardon?
What is the yellow powder that's getting everywhere?
The sulfur.
So you mean some process of purification has broken down? I don't understand.
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand either. I mean, why is it broken down? Why?
And what's this sulfur going to do to you?
I thought it was poisonous.
Yeah? Well, you have come to Sufi gathering, my dear.